Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the
What's
sound
up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. I hope you had a great weekend and everything went well. Certainly, the markets are in a screaming up mode, and nothing, it doesn't appear that anything will stop them anytime soon, and we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. But I think, as we stated last week, if the jobs number was good, the market would probably sell off. And if the job market, if the job news was bad, the market would probably rally. So, as we look back, we saw the initial headline number of 240,000 that appeared to be good. The markets immediately sold off. But then as we looked underneath the covers, we looked into the what was going on. And, of course, the number was not very good because, again, we see the continuing drop in earnings. We see the lack of participation. And we see the drop in payroll taxes, which tells us that the number is not very good. So what we really have is still a mess. But that comes back to what I like to call the chase for yield. So you take away every other investment opportunity because there is no way to get yield. And you end up with a market that continues to try to go higher. Now, I think you can look at this a couple of different ways. You can look at the FANG stocks that have been, you know, basically under pressure other than Facebook. I think you can look at the NASDAQ being under more pressure. I think you can look at the Russell being under more pressure. And those are all signs and messages that there are issues out there. But this is the important thing to take away is you can't fight what's going on in the market. You know, we know that the economy sucks, but we can't say, well, the market sucks. We have to say that the market's going up. So who's going to fight it? Now, you know, you've got all kinds of people making all kinds of elaborate claims of what they think will happen next. And I go, okay, well, you know, I thought last week that, you know, once we broke out above 1950, that 2000 would be a target, and we got there. Now, certainly, I don't like the market here. I think that it's tremendously overvalued. I think it's overbought and overvalued. But I can't fight it. I can't tell you that it's going to go lower from here. I believe that that will be the eventuality over the next, you know, couple of weeks. But certainly, trying to be smarter than what the actual market's doing is really not what we do. We have to wait for our opportunity. We have to observe markets and look for the best things to happen. And I think that is more important than anything else. I mean, you know, if you go back and you listen, you know, in the past, we talked about oil and that we felt that oil was bottoming in the 20s. And now we see oil now pushing up past 36. We thought that commodities were starting to bottom, and we start to see gold and silver and other commodities start to lift off. Now, the grains market is still under trouble, under major bombshell, but I think that looks like it's starting to lift as well. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised to see some sort of short squeeze this week there. But the picture is clear. Well, really, it's not clear. It's murky, but it's clear what to do. What to do is to really sit back and observe these markets until we get a better hint and a better idea of direction. Because, again, to try to say, well, this is the top and it ain't going any higher is silly. I mean, you know, if we look at markets and we understand that history always repeats itself, then we know that a sell-off is near. But we also know that we cannot say at what point and when that sell-off is going to come. Now, we can take, certainly we can take stabs and shots at the market here and there, in which we think that, that we are at a good level. But you really have to now wait for the good levels. You know, never think that you have to be first in. Never think that you have to get it done now. Think about markets as a long-term event that can make you money on a long-term basis. And certainly in history, if you were just long the market, just owned the market, you would have made money. But if you are looking for spots to trade and be more active and take benefit of both sides of the market, then you have to wait for certain opportunities here. The opportunity now appears to be to the downside, but do I want to be early and then have to make a decision on whether or not to get out? You know, if it keeps going against me, because instead of waiting for an opportunity that the market kind of signals to me that it's ready, because certainly everybody and their brother and mother were short a little bit last week that trade. And of course, they all got a ram job because it was not the correct play. Now, I was short a little bit last week myself, so I'm as guilty as any of them. But you have to take what the market gives. Now, from a sheer mathematical probability model, the market's probably, you know, maybe goes up another couple of percent. But, you know, if we have a big move, I think it will be to the downside. But I'm not going to jump in today and say, okay, well, I'm getting short and I don't care. Because what you're going to end up doing is, again, you'll get pushed up against the wall and have to make a decision if it goes against you versus trying to get with the market. So right now, with the market still appears to be pushing higher. And that can change. There is no, again, that can change tonight. There's no way to know. But if you always remember that you want to try to be with the overall long-term trend, okay, then you will find yourself a lot happier camper when you find yourself working with that longer term trend and not trying to be the person outsmarting the overall market, but be the person that has a better feel and says, you know what, the footprints indicate, and right now the footprints indicate that we could still go a little bit higher. There is not a lot of resistance here, and we've had, since February 11th, we have had just one heck of a move. I mean, 6 or 7% up, 2.5% up last week. I mean, are we really going to say that we know that this is the end? And that is something that hurts a lot of investors. And one of the biggest things we tend to do is, I know many of you have bought and played around and, of course, taken your short profits and taken them fast. Okay, and when I say short profits, I mean small profits. But let the dogs keep continuing to run against you. And that is one of the things you have to recognize as an investor and a trader, is when you have a dog, get rid of the dog and let the profits run. Okay, that is more important than anything else, is letting profits run and cutting losses short, not the other way around. Because we all have a tendency, you know, it's even the thought goes through your mind, well, let's see, I'm making 500 here, I'm losing 500 here. Let me take the 500 and cover the other 500 and hold the dog. Because dogs are usually dogs and they're going to work their way lower. And good ones continue to go higher, much farther and above your expectations. Look what happened last week in the steel companies. Okay, they had an announcement. And of course, U.S. Steel went from 7 to 14 or 15 and before selling off late on Friday. So those are just a couple of thoughts for you to think about, because that's what's important in what we do. Make sure you take the time to check out Thinkorswim. It's built by traders for traders. We have a benefit for you in either United States or in Canada. We can help you get cheaper pricing and better off. If you ever miss a show, libertytalk.fm. You get a download every day. Join the over now 200,000 people that download the show every month. Yeah. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm going to send Byron Rankin. I'll be right back with James Dick. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba
Horowitz. Stay with me now. Listen up.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. It's time for the one, the only, the super talented, world knowledge, Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Kaching Report. All right, my dear, welcome aboard, and we got lots of stuff. You got the Aubrey McClendon, you've got the debate, you've got a number of other things. Pick your poison and go.
Well, I guess let's start with the debate and just the general political situation right now, because first of all, it's hugely entertaining, and you know, a lot of people are really kind of lamenting politics, and yes, it has gotten kind of strange and lowbrow for sure. But I also think people are being a little bit prudish about it too. Now, I do think it's time for Trump and Rubio and the rest of them to start putting out some policies, acting a little more presidential. I think the reality of the impending presidential election is starting to become more real for people. So I think we're going to have to start seeing that if the Republicans have a chance. But, I mean, this has just been absolutely fascinating. It's got people involved and interested in reading news and watching news about politics that never have before. And hopefully, if it's played right, it can actually be good for the country, get more people engaged. The whole Romney situation and the Republican establishment just totally puzzles me. I can't quite, they're obviously threatened. They know they can't control Donald Trump, and they don't like that at all. And I don't think they're being fair to the voters. I think they need to let the voters choose. I mean, this is not what our system is, that we let rich people and donors decide who gets elected. I mean, that's part of the problem with politics. So I'm disappointed in what's happening in the Republican Party, and I hope that that can all be worked out very soon.
Isn't that where we've really come? It's the rich that can control, that have in the past have been elected. I mean, isn't it really the special interests? I mean, the guy, you know, guys like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, they support both parties so that they try to get some favorable treatment. And of course, the entitlement collectors like the Democrats and the ones who want tax cuts like the Republicans. But it has been controlled by the money, has it not?
It completely has, Todd. And look where it's gotten us. I mean, this is not the way this country was designed and founded. And it's just so disappointing that we're at this point. And they act like, I mean, I've worked at a couple of really big media organizations. It reminds me of how they act. I mean, everybody's at the top. Everybody's just CYA. Nobody wants to ruffle any feathers, disrupt anything. Nobody takes any risks. And along comes Donald Trump, which has changed everything. I mean, I've never seen a candidate like this before. And he doesn't need their money. And he's reaching out to people. And you've got a candidate in Donald Trump. I mean, whether you like him or agree with him or not, he's got 5-6 million Twitter followers, something no Republican has ever had. He's on social media all the time. Republicans have been notoriously bad at social media. Here is this guy who's mastered the media. He's getting people to cross over. He's reached groups that they've not been able to tap before. He's getting people interested that haven't been interested before. They've been clamoring for this, but they keep picking people who will not appeal to those types. And I'm shocked by the fact that there are certain groups of people in this country that have never even talked to other groups and know how they feel and don't understand them. And I was watching Dallas. I mean, it's a couple of months ago. But there was, you know, a private equity guy on TV, billionaire, you know, in his sunglasses and beautiful Davos going, I don't understand why people are so angry. And I was like, of course you wouldn't understand. You're a billionaire. I mean, you know, you have been one of the people who's benefited, and so many people haven't. So I think, you know, we got to start hearing some policies, but hopefully we can turn this to a positive. All the engagement, all the interest in it, it's the most interesting thing going on in the world right now.
How much damage do you think that the Republican Party is doing to itself? Because it's really, I mean, Mitt Romney's an idiot anyways. That just goes to go. Listen, that's the only family that spent like $200 million of their own money between him and his father and could never get elected to the presidency. But, I mean, between all of them, I mean, don't you think that even if it is Trump, I mean, you know, I mean, I like what he says. I like a guy that just speaks his mind. That's just, you know, good with me. But don't you think they're doing a lot of damage to the party?
I think they certainly can. I mean, when I heard that he was going to be coming out and calling Trump a phony and a fraud, and I was just like, what in the world is going on here? I mean, he's calling the leader of the party these names. And, you know, I mean, first of all, a couple things. It's probably just going to galvanize Trump supporters because Romney's the establishment. I mean, you know, he's a rich guy. They never really connected. I mean, I don't have anything against him personally. I think he's, you know, been an amazing business person. He seems like a wonderful father and husband. But he never connected with those people. And I think they just look at this as, well, there's more big money controlling people coming out and speaking, which Trump has exposed. I mean, you know, that remember that one debate when he was getting booed and he's like, well, they're all big donors for the other people in here. And I was like, thank you. I mean, that's something that the public needs to know. So now I did hear through some sources that there's going to be some more of this coming out. I don't know who or exactly what, but some, you know, Republican establishment types are going to be coming out with more kind of anti-Trump stuff. I think they're going to put a bunch of money in Florida. So, you know, I mean, I guess it remains to be seen. I mean, how much energy Donald Trump has to fight against all this. And Ted Cruz, too, by the way. I mean, they don't like Ted Cruz either.
Nobody likes Ted. I don't like Ted Cruz because, you know, I just don't like him because he's just too scripted. I don't, you know, he's very smart, obviously. But to me, he's just, he's always got the answer without ever thinking about it. It's like he's prepared for every single answer and he's a professional debater anyway. So, I'm saddened by the whole thing, but of course I'm you know, I wrote a blog the other day that, you know, about having the right to vote in this country. And, you know, I believe that the people that are on entitlement programs should not have the right to vote. And Social Security is not an entitlement program. But I think if you're getting welfare or you're getting unemployment until you go back to work, you shouldn't have the right to vote. Do you have any opinion?
Well, I've actually never heard that before. That's interesting. Well, I'm not kind of the philosophy of if you're paying taxes, you should vote. So that's where I would draw the line. I had a friend who was from Australia and was here on a green card and wasn't able to vote and used to complain that I'm being taxed, I'm not able to vote. That's taxation without representation. And I thought she had a good point. So I think if you're paying into the system, then you also get into a situation where what about a stay-at-home mom not paying taxes? Does she get to vote? It's tough. I'd have to think about that one, Todd.
Well, no, just if I mean, if she's a stay-at-home mom, she's paying taxes, but she's not collecting. You're not collecting unemployment, or you're not collecting the link card. You're not getting food stamps. If you're not working because you don't have to work, that's great. But if you're collecting money, especially because of the way it's gone throughout the years, it's been, there's a lot of snarky people that say, well, let's say I only make a few extra dollars to go to work, I might as well stay home. But anyway, I do want to talk about Aubrey McClendon, and of course a pioneer in the space, but to his death. And if they established how he died yet, I mean, I know we know how he died, but did they establish whether it was an accident or a suicide?
Well, last I heard was that the police were going to take a couple weeks to thoroughly investigate. They did say he was not wearing a seatbelt. He was going at a high rate of speed and showed no signs of stopping. We know that he was indicted just the day before, and some other people who know him well have reported that there were some other leveraged situations. If he would have been convicted, he would have faced many, many years in jail. So, you know, just the whole thing, I reported on him that morning after the indictment, and then looked this afternoon and saw he was killed in a car crash. And, I mean, I had to, like, rub my eyes and look twice. And, you know, it was sad. I mean, you know, whether it was controversial, but he was a maverick. Leader, no doubt about it, in the shale industry and getting the U.S. less dependent on foreign oil. So, you know, it's Shakespearean almost. I mean, to see that happen, and it was a really sad thing. And then I've seen other people, you know, involved in business and Wall Street, just so much of their identity tied up into making money and running a business, and when that doesn't go right, they just can't handle it. And I think it's just a really sad, dark part of being in business and being in finance.
Oh, no, I agree. I mean, you know, listen, he was a leader and he was great. And of course, you know, after he died, the stock doubled from $2 to $4.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's crazy. You know, the stock reacts to that, which, I mean, it does happen. I mean, it's, you know, in fact, earnings or profits or whatever. But in the bigger picture, I think it's just sad that people feel so compelled to just leverage themselves and live lavish lifestyles and You know, it's hard. It's hard to run a business, and it's hard, you know, to make money and keep the business. Keep the business going. It's a lot of work, and you're, you know, everybody's cutthroat, and I just always try to keep my life in balance and just remember that, yeah, I got this business. It's great. You know, it's nothing like Chesapeake Energy, but just always keep my, you know, remember my family and remember the good things you have in life so you don't get too wrapped up in all that.
Nobody knows more about that than Jane King. Jane King, thank you so much. It's always great to have you on. You always start the day off great when we have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be back right after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Margie said, Roy.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. It's time for my guy, the one, the only, Mike McClone. Mike, what the hell is going on here, man? I don't know. That rally last week was some kind of powerful.
Yeah, it was very impressive. Yes, S&P right back at 2000. It's a wonderful thing. It's going to go straight up forever. That's great. That's the sense that people have. I think some people have, but you know, I haven't changed my bias at all. I think it's a chance to lighten up on risky assets, which is what we've been basically talking about for quite a while. But that's one thing that's really notable in markets like this, is you have to have some volatility. It has to make it as confusing and as difficult as possible. And it does, so I still stick with the same bias, the markets has turned, and partly because technically we're finally getting all this confirmation, things we talked about forever. And but in the bigger picture, still we have this massive, significant, fundamental situation where the headwinds for the stock market in the U.S. are significant. Number one, because it's gone so far, I mean, past performance, is we've already had some significant rallies the last 5 years, and you can't have a free lunch in the market. And so they have to look forward to Fed tightening. And the Fed's going to be having a meeting very soon, and they're not going to be easing yet. At some point, they might be.
So when you look at the big picture, and again, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, you and I are, me more than you, but we're both, you know, very much into the short term. But, you know, if you're saying it's time to take some risk off the table, I mean, this is really just a blip in the market. I mean, we basically bottomed on February 11th and now have rallied about 7% from that bottom. But just as easily in the next 2 weeks, we could be back down to that low again. And quickly, and typically those things type to happen when investors get into this mode right now that they're very complacent, knowing that the markets are never going down again. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think that there's a lot of fear out there after what happened at the end of the dot-com bubble and then after 2008. I think investors get it. We have high risk in the market. To me, it's more, you know, I think that's still in there. But my bigger concern is just basically what's happened, you know, and what we're going to come back to. Basically, it's just we've had this significant rally boosted by QE and QE going away, and then all these other things turning. But one thing that was kind of notable from last week, I noticed, is, you know, the unemployment number on the headline was basically strong, but one thing that was really notable was the dollar. The U.S. dollar index was weaker last week, and that really shouldn't have happened. So it looks like the dollar could be finally turning when it's universally bullishness. And it still leads me down to one of my favorite positions and favorite recommendations remains in silver. Silver was up a lot last week. It was hurt the week before, so finally coming back. And I think that, going coming from your initial question down to where I think there's some risk-reward opportunities, I still see it in things like silver, partly because it's got a pretty significant catch-up to gold to do. It's at the highest gold-silver ratio. It's the highest since the peak and or the bottom and the peak in 2008. And if we do recover and get, you know, some real inflation, which we'd all love, silver should be one of the primary beneficiaries. But lately, it's actually been doing a good job when the stocks have been going down. So that's kind of what I'm getting to, is I don't know so much to make of, you know, some of the nuances of the volatility, but I'm trying to narrow it down to where we can make some good risk-reward positions and put them on. I think silver is one of the best.
I agree. I like silver. Now, are you concerned that gold has made maybe too quick of a move, or do you think that's just part of it? I mean, it made a hell of a move, and it was very interesting last week. There was many points during the week that gold was rallying and the markets were rallying. You know, that's typically not the correct MO, and including in a lot of part during the week, so were the Treasury. So it was kind of a confusing week when you look at the key factors. What did you take away from that?
Yeah, well, I was impressed with that. Gold and silver did very well, and earlier, well, it was Wednesday, Thursday, before the unemployment number. And I think they're pointing out that they're looking ahead and looking forward, and they're seeing there's an election coming up here. They're seeing that dollar has stopped going up, and they're seeing all this significant buying globally, and there's significant flows in ETFs. The number one flows in all physical and everything is into gold, and we all this fear. There's also a lot of things going out there. Gold starting to trade, as Jim Rickards, trading more like money than a commodity. So I think that's a good sign that gold is doing well, but that's the way markets are supposed to bottom. Gold's been in a significant downtrend for literally since 2013, and it's really just getting crushed. And it's supposed to pop up right away and give you sometimes a hard time to get in. Now, yes, it could be some short covering. I'm sure there's some of that, but to me, it's just a fundamental recovery, and that's what I think silver is just catching up to do, or it should, you know, these kind of things can take off, and fundamentally, they potentially could, where there'll be a lot of people grabbing on board, and that's why I look at silver. I did a presentation on silver 2 years ago, and it was stuck at 15. And I made the case it's going to go to 20. Now, I was right. It didn't go to 10, at least. And I still think that's what's going to happen potentially soon. It's silver is supposed to just pop up to 20. And that's about a 30% rally.
Now, do you see, I mean, you remember, obviously, the gold rally of 13, and silver was like 50, what, it was 50 bucks or whatever it was?
Yeah, that was a peak, and then went all the way down to like 13 or so.
Do you see that type of action possibly happening again? I mean, I know it probably will, but I mean, do you see that in your crystal ball?
I think there's a good potential for that, and a lot of that will be predicated on is if we all, I mean, look what's happening globally. We're all going to negative interest rates, so actually gold and silver have positive carry, and 0.25% of the world's bond markets, when you have to pay for money. And if that trend, for that to happen, I think the next iteration has to be the U.S. potentially shifting easing, which could happen, which would probably be led for a week by week stock market, and that's where I see gold and silver. Over some of the best potential trades. And yeah, at some point, silver is going to get above 50. The question is, is it going to be a big one like that? And that one was a little bit too fast, which failed. I'd rather have it, you know, start out fast and then go slowly in more of a fundamental bullish market. But yeah, it certainly can happen, and it's just a question of when.
Yeah, no, of course we'd rather stick around. Do me a favor and explain, you said carry trade, you know, it's cheaper to carry. To explain what you mean to the average listener who doesn't understand what that means.
Well, it's good. Basically, you can, if you have a U.S. dollar deposit, and you can always buy a two-year note and get like a little less than 1% for 2 years. At least you're getting paid to hold that money. Historically, it's basically your interest rate. And you have gold, you don't earn anything. But it doesn't cost you anything except, you know, it might cost you to store it. It might be a little bit of risk if you have to pay insurance. But that's a good thing I love about the precious metals, gold, silver, platinum, plate. You can buy an ETF that effectively costs in silver, it costs, you know, 20 basis points a year, which is effectively nothing. It's almost the same amount, but if you go to buy carry, now if you go to most of the 25% or so of the U.S. the bond markets in the world now don't pay any interest. In fact, they're negative interest rates. So you're not getting, you actually have to pay to hold your money, which means things like gold and silver, you know, about as attractive as they can be because you actually don't have to pay.
Right.
And there's no liability.
Right. And I mean, that's a common trade done through a lot of things. And that's when you understand it, you have money that you're trying to switch around. Now, I don't know if you heard Jim Rogers last week, but he came out and said that he's selling all the big tech stocks and he's buying China and he's buying gold and silver. What's your take of his strategy?
Well, I'm a big fan of Jim. I've met him a few times. Last time I met him was 2012 at his home in Singapore, and that was for other dealings. But I completely agree with him. He's very good at the big picture. He says he's a horrible trader. But that's one thing that's notable this year is the NASDAQ. NASDAQ is one of the worst performers among the stock market. I mean, S&P's down for the year to date 2.2%. NASDAQ is down almost 4%. So that has changed. Another thing that's really changed is the small caps. Small caps have been trading more poorly. These are these indications that you and I have been looking at for 2 years where the markets have been telling us something is wrong here. And that's one of the key things. I don't want to get away from the NASDAQ too much, but I agree with him, except I go back to the small caps. In an environment where the dollar has been stronger and the S&P 500 should be doing worse because the dollar has been stronger, the small caps should be doing better, and they haven't. They've been doing worse. So they're indicating something's wrong here. And I have to agree with him. And certainly from a value standpoint, if you look at value, you know, I made that comment last year that the NASDAQ was in a bubble, basically on this simple statistics. And you can look at the value there. It's just certainly looking in trend following over the last 5 years. It's had a massive rally and it topped at 5,000 in the index. But you look at things like commodities, they've had a substantial sell-off. Almost all of them are below their cost of production. And you look at things like silver, they're just so cheap. So if you're looking 5 years out and looking back 5 years, where's the value? There's definitely some value in commodities and things like precious metals and silver, and there's definitely not a lot of value in the stock market, notably the NASDAQ and tech stocks.
Oh, that goes without saying. I mean, you know, again, this is, you know, you can't really time the market because it's almost impossible. I mean, you know, but we do know that certain things do happen, and that's where your words are always. Take a little bit off the table, you know, but get your cash is king, because if you got cash, you can buy when these things happen. And I'm in agreement in that you have to be, you know, in a defensive posture. And I think this is a great time to be in a defensive posture. You might miss part of the move, but we know, you and I both know for a mathematical certainty that there's going to be a correction. It might come from 2,200. Who knows? There's no way to say when it's going to happen. We just know it's going to happen, right?
Yeah, the question is the depth, and that's what really scares me. Is it almost always? It's a simple rule that there's no free lunch, and when you have an action, you definitely almost get an opposite reaction. And that's just looking at the trend lines and the things that Roger Babson spoke about a lot during before the Great Depression. It's just markets don't go too far without correction. Sometimes they sucker in the most people at the bad levels, and that's where I think we've turned. And that's the key thing we have to think about is bottom line. In the big picture, I think we're still supposed to think about trading is difficult. You might be good at it. I always have a hard time doing it. But think about underweighting risk assets. They've turned overweighting assets like a store of value, and even looking at commodities and silver. And like you said, in a global deflationary environment, cash is king. And it's still a global deflationary environment.
We are hanging out with my guy, Mike McClone. We're going to stop by here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Make sure you get the download the podcast on demand at libertytalk.fm. The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horace will be right back with more from Mike and no free lunch. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's my guy, Mike McClone, ex-trader, an analyst, does it all. Very, very smart guy. You can see him when you see him on air. You know that he knows what he's talking about. And he doesn't try to pussyfoot around the issues. All right, so, Mike, I look at a lot of things, and I want to ask you about the jobs number. Now, I thought the jobs number, you know, 240 was okay, but this is the one thing that bothers me, and nobody talks about it. The payroll tax continues to decline, which means that people are making less money. That's just a simple math. There is no beating the payroll tax. It's an automatic deduction. It has to come out. You may be able to deduct it later, but when they have to pay it, So the amount that we're collecting on payroll tax is lower than it was 3 years ago, which means that people are making less money than they were making 3 years ago. Why doesn't anybody recognize that? Does it have anything meaning to you, and does it affect anything?
Yeah, well, I think that's a key thing is bottom line, follow the money. And you just look at household income in this country. Since the end of 2000, it's flat. It's unchanged. That's just almost unheard of. It's just not good. I want it to be better, but we just have to point out the facts. What you pointed out, just follow the money. Retail sales, tax receipts. I mean, I don't know exactly how much tax receipts. I haven't watched those lately, but I just don't see it. I mean, wonderful if we could see these things, but it's one thing people haven't. I don't think the academics and the professors, I've heard someone say at the Fed, have not figured out yet, is it's a different world. It is different this time. And a big thing is that there's just not these major signs we've seen in the past of things picking up. So the unemployment number, the headline number was strong, but you know, the average hour earnings were weaker year over year. They were down. There's just no signs of inflation. So maybe there's a lot of people part-time work, but they're not getting the full-time work they need. But either way, don't have to take my word for that. I think just follow what's happening in the market. Market's been telling us that. And I don't, I think this might have just given us, oh, and by the way, the thing is they're looking at the headline number and potential inflation, but the problem is that is backward-looking stuff that's convincing them they need to tighten because inflation's supposed to be picking up, but everything else should show, most of the other things are showing otherwise, which is what is kind of the bad situation for the equity market. They are starting to tighten in an environment that's actually slowing down, a global U.S. economy that's slowing down. And that's virtually the only time that's ever happened in history, except when Volcker needed to shut down the inflation.
Now, do you think that they will raise, or do you think they'll ease?
Well, right now, they're poised to raise. I hope they don't have to raise anymore. I think there's a good potential. The one they did in December was one and done. And I fear that by the end of this year, we're going to be talking about easing. And the number one only indicator that's really going to tell them they need to ease is if the stock market goes down. The problem with that is it's lose-lose. If the stock market continues up, there's going to be no reason for them not to tighten. That's what they're looking at. And so they'll tighten, and it won't. So there's not a lot of upside because they're taking back all that fuel that they provided the last 5 years, you know, QE. And if it goes down, which I think is the more likely case, the easing will just follow because all the dominoes will tumble with the stock market going down.
Now, explain to me again, I know we've talked about this before, but why does the Fed care about the stock market? What is their interest in this in the overall stock market?
Unfortunately, that was one of the key takeaways I was kind of shocked by when reading Ben Bernanke's book, The Courage to Act, is how often he mentioned the reaction in the market the next day for when they did something. And oftentimes, that next day is just position squaring. You and I know as traders, if the guy next to you is short, and he's short a big position, and he gets stopped out, it sometimes just makes market move in ways they shouldn't move. And bottom line, I think it's, we all know there's no big, more powerful forward-looking force in the world than the stock market. And if the S&P 500 drops 20%, it takes the dominoes with it. You know, the market just sentiment, consumer sentiment will just completely follow it down as a bottom line. If it goes up, it's a sign things are fine. But the biggest risk is what they help produce over that last 5-6 years with QE, which was a bit excessive when they got to QE3, has not, you know, it just pulled forward a lot of stock market returns. And if we get through this period historically, and if I can look back from this 10 years from now and say, oh man, that was a free lunch, amen. But I just don't think that's going to happen. It'd be a first time in history.
Now, you and I both know that the world economies are in a disaster. How do you see this whole mess playing out in your playbook? What do you see next? I mean, you know, they had the G20 last week, and of course that was a bunch of BS anyways, but how do you see this whole thing playing out worldwide? I mean, you know, we've seen Japan stave off everything with their continued, you know, programs, but how do you see this playing out from a Mike McClone view?
The biggest fear I have is there's really only one major stalwart left in the world that's holding up, the one pillar left in the world that's basically holding everything up. It's the U.S. And bottom line, if you narrow it down to one little pillar in this whole big forest, it's the U.S. stock market. That's all that's left. If the U.S. stock market goes down, every single domino in the world that's already been heading down, Europe, China, Japan, you know, Canada, I mean, just keep mentioning him, will follow with it. So there's only one pillar left, and that's why I say, why put all your risk in one basket? It's just not worth the risk. Because that pillar is what I see is the risk that the U.S. stock market goes down, the world heads into a global recession that we're kind of overdue for, and who knows how long it'll last, but hopefully we'll be able to get out of it organically. Unfortunately, I don't think that'll happen because it'll mean more easing. If we're lucky, that won't happen, but the risks are so high. I'm just afraid of that normal little iteration with just a little bit of mean reversion in the U.S. coming back. Let's just put it this way. If the U.S. stock market kind of comes back to where it was relative to Europe, European markets before the crisis, we would be well around, probably well below the highs from 2007 and 2000, which is quite scary.
You know, you and I have been on this train for a number of weeks in the commodity space, and it looks like you saw some big action last week in oil. You saw some big action in steel last week. Is this a sign that we're starting to bottom in these spaces?
Absolutely. I agree completely, and it's just a question, but commodities are showing a significant sign of bottom, U.S. dollar showing a significant sign of a top, and I think one of the best places to nail that down is gold's already done it. We've been bullish gold. Silver, I think, is a great place to go. Commodities, but I have to think of investors. Our listeners are investors. I'm an investor. In a shorter term, you can buy a commodity index. You can buy an ETF that tracks commodities, but you have significant carry. Here's that word again we talked about earlier. It means you can't buy crude oil without having to pay this carry. It's very expensive to hold an ETF that tracks crude oil, but you can buy all the precious metals in an ETF and not have to worry about it. So that's why I want to be careful. It's great to be tactical. You can be tactical in commodities and have a short-term outlook, maybe buy USO or some of these other products, but you just can't buy them and put them away and forget about them. So that's why I look at something where I see a little more traction and a lot more upside, and that's effectively money, and that's kind of, if I narrow it down to silver. But, yeah, you have to be careful putting all your eggs in one basket. But, yeah, absolutely, I agree. It's just a question, what do you do about it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I do something different than most do, because I'll buy the physical and just put it away. But I get it. And so is that a good sign for the future that things may actually be getting better? Because my biggest problem is there's really no good jobs over here. You know, we don't do any more manufacturing, and we've really eliminated – too much of the population that needs to work, that needs to make, you know, more than the minimum wage. I mean, nobody wants to live on minimum wage, but the unfortunate part is a lot of the family guys, you know, that are your age, my age, you know, let's say 45 to 65, they're just not making enough money because, you know, they're unskilled. Most of them, they were, you know, manufacturer, machinist, whatever, and those jobs don't exist anymore. Is there hope to get through this?
Oh, absolutely. I'm definitely an optimist and hopeless optimist sometimes, but I think it's just a major, significant, historic paradigm shift right now. It's basically the third industrial revolution. People call it the fourth revolution in technology. There's good jobs, but they're just much different. You have to be there's much different skills. I mean, there's always going to be jobs for plumbers and electricians and things like that, but the skills are just so much different now. You need much more technical and programming, electrical type, you know, type skills. And to me, that's one thing that's really shifting. And one thing I've really noticed that is in energy production in this country, something that's never happened in the history of this entire world or country, is the total production of energy in this country based on EIA estimates, Energy Information Administration estimates, in this country have increased, total production have increased about 30% since the end of 2000. Well, whereas the total consumption has been completely unchanged. That's never happened over such a long period when the economy has grown 80%. It's never happened. And why? It's technology. Technology has allowed us to do more with less in terms of energy consumption, and we're creating more. And that's where I think for our listeners, we have to do whatever we can to make sure us and our kids are jumping on that bandwagon of shifting paradigm shift in technology, changing our lives.
Well, we'll also talk about the way companies have changed, because a lot of that comes to what the companies have done themselves. But that'll take us to the end of the day. Mike McClone, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. That was my guy, Mike McClone. If you miss an episode, libertytalk.fm. Every day you can check it out. And for today, that'll do it for the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you later.
Put some feel good in my soul.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.